everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We are here, of course, on our WGN Plus stream, which you can watch every Saturday at 10:30 and 4:30 p.m. following Mike Toomey's fantastic Laugh Tracks show, and on Sundays at 4 p.m. Today, as you might guess, we're talking about a momentous time in our history, and that was the initial sailing of the Titanic that never made it where it was going, but it did end up in a musical called Titanic the Musical. I'm going to say this up front, not to be confused with Titanic, which is a parody, very fun show. You've already met the cast of that show here on Behind the Curtain, but that is a different show playing at Broadway Playhouse. This is an amazing, warm, and powerful musical at Marriott Lincolnshire playing through June 1st. And joining me is most people who went down with the ship, one who didn't, but I think we're doing the math right. But anyway, let me introduce you to this fantastic cast. You know, how you pick how to introduce each of you, your work is so amazing that you've done. But let's just start it. I'm going to actually start with you, David Giralmo, because you, of course, play the captain here. He was a real person, Captain E.J. Smith. But your past work, including Hello Dolly, with somebody else who's joining us today, 1776, War Paint. Love War Paint. Saw it a few times. Just amazing. And of course, you went to Broadway to do that along with Kennedy. Anyway, welcome. Your problem was apparently you ignored the warnings from other ships. We'll get to exactly what you did in just a moment.
Okay.
Also joining us, not you personally, but
I know.
Captain Smith. And then somebody close to you, Heidi Kettenring, joins us, who, may I mention, is the 2025 Guy Atkins Award winner for excellence in the advancement of music theater.
Yes,
presented
thank you.
By Porchlight. Now, I don't know, Heidi, I once got an award from Porchlight, and I had to give him a check. Did that keep the date? No, they didn't do that. They didn't do that.
No, they did not make me pay them at
they made
all.
Me I had to clip a 20 to the back of an entry form. So
wow.
It happens.
That's
it
a joke. If Michael Weber is watching, that's a joke. Okay. No, it was one of the greatest awards I've ever gotten. Thank you so much. And congratulations to you. But of course, for your work in Hello Dolly, King and I, Angels in America. And as you know, I have your shoes from Wicked, which you've signed for me.
I do.
Nessa Rose, which I now, by the way, have Galinda's shoes.
Really?
Yes, I got those as well, signed by your friend from The Death Becomes Her, who got very mad because she also said we weren't allowed to take anything from the show. How did you get my shoes? Anyway, I felt so bad. I offered her a shoe.
Of the theater, Paul.
Yeah, we're discovering a foot fetish here.
Exactly.
No, you're going to see it. No, I'm going to show you a fetish in a moment. It's something else. And Mark David Kaplan, who, of course, known for Oliver, Anything Goes, Fiddler on the Roof, just amazing, which you did with Adam Pelty, one of your cast members as well. So Fiddler is... just an amazing show, and I always love it, and we've gotten to talk before. Anyway, you, of course, play Isidore Strauss, the co-owner of Macy's.
Yes.
You didn't remain, but your stores did. And so congratulations to you. And I should have mentioned, Heidi, of course, you're Ida Strauss, so you and your wife, your husband, went down with the ship. James Earl Jones II, who I fell in love with Come From Away, but Full Monty Company, Dreamgirls, and on and on. You play Edgar Bean. And another officer, fourth officer, Boxhall, a lot of multicasting in this show. And we're going to talk about those characters as well, but I always love talking to you. Can we go ahead and clarify? No, you're not the son of James Earl Jones, but you are related.
Yes, I'm a cousin. So,
okay. It's the first thing I got it when I saw the show. Like, James Earl Jones, I clear this up with him every single time. And by the way, if he was your dad, what's wrong with that? I mean, it didn't get any better than that. And also joining us, Joel Gelman. Joel, I'll be honest. As I'm picking the principal characters to join us, I didn't do it because you were John Hancock in 1776, although that would have been reason enough. Oh, and actually, you were Fiddler on the Roof playing with Mark as Laser Wolf. I've always wanted to play Tevye. We'll deal with that in the future. But anyway, and Frozen and Ragtime. But here you're John Jacob Astor IV and a second officer. But your voice was so amazing. And this was not just me. That almost everybody that walks out of that show, it's like, we hear you. We know you. I said, I just really want him to join us. Because you all agree that his voice is just stunning.
So I think it means his mic is too hot most of the time.
It might be, well, because he's always in a booth. And I think that's part of what, inside joke.
Yeah, it really is.
Anyway, welcome to you all. And by the way, so fetish. So I love the Titanic. I love the history of the Titanic. I'm just going to share a couple of things with you. This actually is a creamer from the Titanic with an inscription underneath. I'm not going to waste our time talking about my collection here, but this actually, a woman who died on the Titanic, it's all on the bottom here, gave it to somebody to save her life and said, here, take my coat. This was in the pocket. You need to go. And she did. And then was saved. They engraved it, gave it back to the family of the woman who died. And it says on the bottom, to so-and-so who gave her life to save a friend.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's amazing. That's
yeah, really, really powerful. So I have that, and I have some tiles from various rooms in the Titanic and a whole bunch of coal from the Titanic as well. This coal should upset you because you went down with this on the show. Anyway, so yes, I know about the Titanic and lots of history. Let's get into the show. I'm going to come to you, Captain. If you can give us a little bit I think everybody knows the story, but what is the story of the Titanic, just so people get it? And how does it become a musical of all things? It's a tragedy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the true, it's a tragedy in the perfect sense of the word, because it could have been avoided in a million different ways. There was a terrible confluence of events that created a situation that they were unable to escape from. I mean, this ship was sailing along perfectly for 4 days. You know, they left England in April 10th, I guess it was, for the quick trip over to Cherbourg, France, and then back over to Ireland, and then finally off to America. And clear sailing, calm waters, beautiful, gorgeous, no problem. And of course, on the night that they actually hit the struck the iceberg off the starboard bow,
it was
a very very clear but very dark night. There was no moon. There was no wind, so there was no distinction between the horizon and the sky. And the lookout, of course, for whatever reason, both of the lookouts, neither of them had binoculars that night. The binoculars were not up there, so they were just using their eyesight, and they didn't see it until it was way too late. When we say in the story that the ship, that it's about a quarter of a mile away, maybe less, the ship was almost a quarter of a mile long. So to turn that ship, you know, when the first officer who was on the deck at the time called hard to starboard, meaning go to port, essentially, the ship didn't have time to turn. I mean, they did start turning, and that probably helped cause part of the sinking issue, because they then created a gap on the starboard side of about 300 feet long. It's a terrible tragedy because it could have been avoided. The other thing about it, though, is that this story as a musical works because it's not about the tragedy. It's a story about these people and the heroism that they showed, their characters, the beautiful story of the Strausses, which you can talk to Heidi and Mark David about, the story of the heroism of Lightoller, who Joel plays, of James's character, who puts his wife on the ship, on the lifeboat, and says goodbye, get on that ship, you have to survive. These people's story, the captain's story, who I believe acted heroically throughout the entire thing, throughout the entire, you know, trip. These are stories of heroism, not tragedy. And the fact that Maury Yeston and Peter Stone, who wrote the musical, saw it as a character study of heroism and life, real life in 1912, I think it makes a perfect venue for a beautiful musical.
And also perfect that Maury Yeston, who's near an 80 right now, sent you all a congratulatory letter.
Well, I met
what
Maury.
That must have felt with.
I met him a couple of years ago. I did this show a couple of years ago in Maine and at the Fulton Theater in Lancaster. So Maine State Music Theater, he came to see the show, and we had a long, you know, visit with him afterwards, and he loves this show. Mm. It's one of his favorite things he's ever done. He knows how hard it is to do. So when he sends you a message saying, thank you for taking on this beautiful piece, it's worth remembering.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. The opening number, whatever, it's so stunning. Yeah. A quick trivia for you, David. Do you know what the captain's final words were on the boat, on the ship?
Yes. Be British.
Yes. Do you know what the final words were before that, actually?
Yes, it's every man for himself, boys, or something like that. It's take care of yourselves now, something along those lines.
And the line that I know, you are right about all, but the line that I know is he hands a baby to somebody on a boat and says, tell them we did our best.
That's a very apocryphal story. You know, that's the story that after the ship went down, there was a lifeboat floating about and a man swam up to the lifeboat with a child in his arms, handed it off to the people in the boat and said, tell them we did the best we could or something along those lines, and then swam back towards the field of victims who were floating about in the water. And the people on that lifeboat swear it was Captain Smith. Now, who the hell knows?
We don't know, but it sounds good.
It's a great story,
it's
isn't it?
It's a great story.
Before we take a break, I do want to let's meet the Strausses. And so Heidi, Mark, David, talk a little bit about your character. Mark, David, let me just start with you. The Strausses are rich people.
They are rich people. They are rich people who worked very hard for this. You know, I mean, so it's what I love most about it, you know, because we also get to play third class passengers. There's that dream of coming to America that you see in so many people's stories, in particular the Cates and the third class passengers. I feel like that was the Strausses once, and that, you know, wasn't necessarily on the Titanic, but he worked really hard and he came to America as an immigrant, and he you know, built his life there with his wife, whom he adored.
Yeah, and Heidi, in playing Ida, I mean, just the strength of that woman to determine you could have lived, you could have been saved.
Yeah, she's incredible to me. I mean, I've read a lot about her, and I mean, her family was everything to her. And they had, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, six children. And, you know, in the song, in the opening song, Alice Bean speaks about how she wasn't well and that they were vacationing on the French Riviera. Whether or not that had anything to do with her decision of, you know what, I have lived my life. I haven't been well. This man is the reason for my life. My children have their life ahead of them. I am not going to leave him alone here with this. I mean, the mettle that this woman must have had at a time when a lot of women, women's position were to be the matriarch of the family, but the man did everything. And the fact that she said, no, I'm not leaving. I'm staying here with you. And I'm going to die on this boat with all of these men in first class and all of these people of every age, gender, creed on this boat. It's moving every single night to be able to say those words, where you go, I go.
Right. You know what her last words were?
I don't know.
We were supposed to start a spring sale next week. Just really sad.
Luckily her kid wants to, you know, start catalogs, so they're going to be just
the catalogs,
right, exactly. Catalogs,
which actually, you know, that was the kickoff. Macy's truly became the biggest store after because of their kids.
It was the old against the new.
Their biggest conundrum on the ship before you obviously act two, right, is what are we going to do? The kids, and I finally look at her and say, you know, it's a new world. I don't understand this. Let have at it, kids.
And your character's last words, I will take down Marshall Fields. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the second and third class cabins. And meet who we have going there. Stay with us right here on Behind the Curtain. We are back to Behind the Curtain. We're going to the second class of the Titanic, the musical, playing at Marriott Lincolnshire through June 1st. James Earl Jones, your character, one of your main characters, of course, is Edgar Bean. You, your wife, played by Lillian, really kind of humor in this show, but you're second class and your wife wishes she was first.
She does. She wishes she was first. And he's a little more humble, and he just wants to be able to give her snippets of a better life. You know, he arranged this trip so that she could see what it was like, but, you know, that's kind of his gift. He can't fully engross himself in something like that. And they spend most of the show kind of going back and forth like, hey, I thought you might enjoy this. And she's like, I do, but I would also enjoy that over there. And he's like, okay. So it's an inch foot game. And also, I'm going to take a very quick moment just to say shout out to Darian Golding, who plays Barrett. Amazing voice, but also an amazing artist. This background is his. He drew it. He does a rendering for every show. And so I just want to send a shout out
it looks
to
beautiful.
Darian Golding right now.
Wait, do you know the real names of who your characters were? What their real names were?
So I think Edgar is actually based on Edward Bean, who actually survived.
Correct. As did his wife, Ethel,
who and, also survived. Right. So, and they weren't from Indianapolis. They actually were from England. And so it is very interesting. Like when you see it kind of like change, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. We have the room to play, and frankly, somebody's got to die.
Yeah, we know it's going to exactly. And David, when you next see Maury, ask him why they changed the names and the location. We'll figure it out. But Joel, let me come to you because playing John Jacob Astor IV, incredibly rich, which is, you know, no question. But also you have roles in this where we're kind of seeing you on the other side of the boat. Your characters are just very strong in this show. And your voice amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm honored to be included with these superstars that I get to grace the stage with every day. And Charles Lightoller was an incredible human being who had an amazing life beyond the Titanic, before the Titanic. And so it's a privilege to be able to, you know, hopefully do honor to him and his family every night too.
Does he live?
He does.
Yeah.
He lived. He was apparently sucked under and then blown back out and then got on a capsized lifeboat and pulled a bunch of other people out of the water, coached them to balance on the lifeboat. And
was he holding onto a door?
Basically a door. Basically a door.
All right. By the way, Benjamin Guggenheim also died on this boat. He was richer than you.
Yeah.
But you had that name and that history, and so people kind of stuck with it. Heidi, talk a little bit about the set in this show, because it's so simple, so clean, but so effective.
It's so beautiful. I love playing on this set. I mean, the set is basically made to look... What's interesting at the Marriott is that often they try to make the set the same sort of on all four sides-ish, so that everybody gets the same experience. But with this one, the set sort of goes up forward towards the main lobby doors when you're coming in. So when you're walking in, you are walking towards the bow of the ship, which is a little bit higher. But if you're on the other side, you're sort of seeing, it's sort of interestingly, symbolically, like the three classes of people. You've got three decks that go up that sort of represent the third class, the second class, the first class. There are these beautiful lifeboats that are in the header of the set. Colette Pollard is so incredible. She's our set designer. And there are removable gangway railings that come and go. There are ropes. There are these beautiful, we call them spools, but they're, you know, they're made to look like parts of a ship, but sometimes they act as tables. Sometimes they act as the radio that the radio operator. It's so fun to play on, and we are right up inside the audience in this set. It is a thrilling playground for us, I must say.
And you know, David, one of the other people on this boat, J. Bruce Ismay, who is played in the show by Adam Pelty, of course, he survives this thing, and there's a lot of lore about that, right? Here's the guy who kind of was part of designing the boat and part of the company that owned this thing. Your relationship with him is very tense. You go down with the ship, and he gets the heck off.
Yeah. Listen, first of all, let me just tell you, we are so lucky that Adam Pelty was available to do this. You know, he was a replacement during rehearsals, and we're just extraordinarily lucky that Adam was available and amenable to come and do this in 2 days. He essentially came in and learned it and began doing it. Yeah, the captain, in real life, the captain and Ismay got along just fine. You know, for dramatic purposes, Ismay is sort of the heavy in some ways in this show, in that he, you know, he comes across as very sort of supercilious and wanting to create a legend where, you know, I suspect he just wanted to get there as safely as everybody else, but as quickly as everybody else. In our show, Ismay absolutely pushes the captain and everybody else to get there as fast as they can. And that's part of the problem that they ran into. In real life, Ismay survived, but he did not thrive afterwards because this thing was hanging over him. How did you survive? How did you get a spot on the boat, etc.? He had a longish life, but it wasn't a happy one after the Titanic disaster.
And Mark, Dave, talk a little bit about, we talked about the music, the opening and the closing music is just stunning. But the thing is, this is a show and therefore music about people who happened to be on this boat that went down.
Absolutely. The music in this story unfolding behaves as such an amazing conduit to the drama that ensues. And honestly, I want to say it is a privilege to get to sing this music every night. It is it's a starter. It you can come in feeling, you know, everybody has their day. We come in feeling how we're feeling. But somehow when we all lock into the hope and the magic that these first lyrics start to say about taking off on this unheard journey, we are kind of all end up being on the same page. And I'm, you know, and personally, I want to say it's thrilling to get to be opposite my dear friend of 30 plus years, Heidi, as my wife. I mean, it couldn't have happened any better. Also, the more you don't realize this about something that's so lofty about the Titanic trip, it's a huge mirror for what's going on right now everywhere in our lives.
I want to talk about that with you. With sadness, our show has to end, but I'm hoping you folks will stay on with me a little bit and we'll do a bit of a bonus discussion. So for those who, after the show airs on the weekend, on Monday morning, you'll see this at WGNradio.com with an extended discussion with this cast. Titanic the Musical, an epic voyage of love, loss, and legacy, playing at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. It's 50th anniversary season, I might add, running through June 1st, and you can get tickets through Marriott Theater. Be sure to check it out. Thanks, everybody, joining us for Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next week. But next week, go online as well and watch our bonus discussion. Thanks for joining us. And we are back on Behind the Curtain with our bonus discussion with the cast of Titanic, the musical, playing at Marriott Lincolnshire. We never have enough time on the show to talk about things, but Mark David, we were talking about the music of this show and how gorgeous it is. James Earl Jones II, let me just come to you because you've done some incredible show between Come From Away and Full Monty Company. You've done Sondheim, I mean, all these shows. And the music here... I mean, look, Murray Estin did 9. I mean, he's got some incredible incredible credits behind him. But talk about in terms of your character, because you and your wife are sort of this comic foil in the show. I think it's fair to say, that's not fair to say, you can correct that, but they really do add humor to what's going on here, especially Lillian and your wife or your wife.
Right. So Lillian and I have known each other now for about 12 years.
Oh, that helps, doesn't it?
But we've never done a show together. Like, we did She Loves Me, but we've never been paired together as a couple. When I did She Loves Me at the Marriott, she was on stage rarely at the same time that I was. And so it's been so fun to play with her. I feel like she always... bubbly energy. And it is easy for us to feed off of one another. But she's absolutely hilarious, and she does things in the moment that well, and when she does them, it makes me giggle. And for instance, which nobody really knows or probably cares about, but so, you know, she lost her voice and she was out for a little bit. So when she came back to the show, she's been keeping lozenges in her mouth. Well, right before the she's like, oh my God, I have this lozenges in my mouth and I don't have time to take it out. She's like, I'm just going to keep it. I said, fine. She runs on stage and singing. And while we're in a freeze, she's trying to keep the lozenge from coming out of her mouth. And so she's like maneuvering it. And it's just, and I'm looking at her and I'm like, don't laugh. Don't, She just tickles me. And I love it so much. And honestly, what I think is great is that Lillian is funny, but like any time spent in the men's dressing room, you will find, we already know Mark David is funny. And so, and what some people may not know is that the very serious captain, David Dromo, is hilarious. He comes in with like one-liners out of his dressing room that just tickle you so much. Blaze and then, and Joel, I wish I had had a chance to tell you all in real time. Joel's nickname is Candy now. His name is Candy. And we've decided that.
Goodbye, James.
Candy, is it Candy Joel Gilman.
Because you're eating candy?
He loves candy, and he's just so doggone sweet, right?
Joel, come to my house because I have every piece of crap in the world. When I go to the theater, yes, actually, Paul. When I came to see you guys, it's like Walgreens in my pockets because
I love
it. Yeah. I got a whole candy stand going candy. On.
That was you.
It's unbelievable. And Joel, let me come to you. By the way, do Joel and Mark David, do you guys drive Adam Pelty crazy by asking him to regale you with stories about his dad and all the years he played Fiddler?
Oh, well, no. I did Fiddler with Adam. With
I know.
Adam,
oh, with Adam.
With Adam and Lee. I think the last Inception Candlelight, I was Mendel, the rabbi's son. Ah. And Adam Pelty, our Ismay, played Fiedka. So it was that long ago. But I often do my Lee Pelty in the dressing room, but nobody really.
Nobody but me knows it. Nobody exactly. but me knows who that
exactly.
is.
Adam laughs, you come out and chortle, and everyone else is like crickets. They have no idea. So
we're usually still laughing.
Well, imagine my life. Every reference I make, nobody knows. So I you know, I'm living in the 60s, and, you know, Andy Griffith, who?
You David, can come I've join been, us. We know that.
Even during the course of the interview, David, this was actually one of my questions, but boy, did you answer it. Research, you know, I thought I'd regale you with, but that, you know, every question, I shouldn't have asked you the question of what the captain's last.
Well,
here you are. Let me tell you the last four lines that he said.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, did you know this, or when you take on a role, do you say it's time to learn?
Look, one of the things that you said, and I want to build on it just to answer this question, is that these are real people. There are times, there've been times backstage before the show when I'm standing with a couple of the younger guys, and I say, remember what we're doing tonight is representing these people. These are real human beings. Yeah. They lived and they died on this ship. Yeah. And it is an honor and a privilege to do that. Well, when you have a real person, when you're playing a real person, like all of us did, are doing, there's historical references to these people that you can call on to give you some background. In the long run, you use what's in the text and what's in the music to tell you who these people are and how they're referred to. But you have the opportunity to do all of this research that you might want to do. And who's not fascinated by the Titanic and the people that lived on the Titanic?
Yeah. You know, one time, Heidi, I get your reaction to this. I'm not going to say a name, but I interviewed an actor and she was playing a historic role. I mean, a role you would all know. If I said it, you'd know. Okay. And so one of my questions was to ask about what research did you do about this person? And the answer I got back was nothing. And I said, what do you mean nothing? And she said, I'm an actor playing a role. I'm reading a script. That's all that matters to me. I'm sort of curious, Heidi. I mean, I admit it was a woman who I was talking to. That surprised me a little bit, because if I was playing an historic figure, as David was sort of clarifying, I think I would want to know more, but you're an actor. So, I mean, am I wrong? It's like, you shouldn't have to worry about it.
Well, you know what? I think there's two sides to this coin, because I think that, because I, like, for example, I just did 1776 at the Marriott and I played John Dickinson, and I did a lot of research on John Dickinson, and it did not necessarily help me in the playing of John Dickinson, because he is written in the musical very, very differently. So, well, let me rephrase that. It actually did help me in the playing of it, but none of it was in the foreground of what I was doing. Because what was on the page, similar to Ismay in this play, he's considered the heavy. A lot of people were like, you're the bad guy. Because of my history lesson that I gave myself, I was able to be like, absolutely not. He was not the bad guy. He's the antagonist, but he was not the bad guy. He was actually a really honorable, wonderful man. Yeah. So for me personally, it is important for me to do research because I like having all of that. That said, I do understand some actors' decision not to do that, maybe until they've read the play, because sometimes I do think once they have read the play, they think, well, I know enough about this person to know that that actually might not only not help me, it might hinder me because I'm going to have polarizing thoughts about it. So I can understand where that human is coming from. For me personally, I like to know about the people that I'm portraying if they actually existed. Yeah. So I do think that there's many, many facets to it. But for me personally, it is important to know so that I can pick and choose and grace what is on the page with the little aspects of that person that maybe the audience doesn't catch, but I know from their past.
And by the way, not only do I have your shoes, but you want to come over, I have a John Hancock signed document. That'll bring back.
Hey, you got all of my stuff over
it
there.
Exactly. It goes back. Except it's the real John Hancock. But so Joel, I don't know. I mean, yeah. So you knew, obviously, it's easy to learn about Esther and Lighthaller. But talk to me about sort of the mindset, how you get in the mindset of somebody who, you know, might be dying on this ship and all of that and working this ship. What do you have to put yourself through to be ready for that? Because you all know where the show ends, right? You know what's going to happen. The first half of the show, we're boarding the boat and everybody's having a great time and it's humor and whatever, but you all know where it's going. How does that work in your mind as you go from the first half to the second half?
Yeah, I think it's just trying to, you know, live genuinely with what these characters are dealing with, you know? I think there's so much... there's so much excitement and anticipation that I think we all board the ship with. It's a monumentous occasion, and that's very easy to latch on to. And, you know, I think for Lighthaller specifically, watching the breakdown of this, you know, incredibly iconic journey and watching his best friend and, you know, coworker Murdoch, you know, really sort of fall into the depths of despair and get frozen, and watching the captain go through it, who I think he idolizes deeply, you know, and I think it's very easy to take that journey when you have an incredible company of actors who are giving you those moments, which I'm very, you know, lucky to have. I think we all are.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing thing to watch, and the teamwork, yeah, if you will, that goes on is amazing. And Mark, David, let me ask you that. You know, we take you and your wife, you're like a unit, right? I mean, you're always together, you're a unit, you're going to live and die together. And Heidi, the strength that Ida shows is, you know, is incredible. But I'm sort of curious, when you were doing some research for your role and learning about your character, how tough is it for your character? I mean, your wife, as I said earlier, could have lived. In some ways, you made the decision to honor her wishes, and she's very strong, so I don't know that you had a choice. But what goes through your mind in this character of knowing my wife could live, but she's not going to because she's going to be with me?
Oh, and it all happens on stage in this moment. It's the part we call to the lifeboats, where there's just, you know, the fracas is going on. And that is, you see encapsulated on stage who's getting on them and who is not. I go through a lot of stuff personally. And this is notwithstanding of any history I did about Isidore Strauss, because the reality is all of that was important to me, but the kinetic synapse stuff that happens moment to moment is me realizing, you know, using people in my life, realizing somebody who've been together for 40 years. I mean, you know, my parents have been together 70 years in September. So I will be honest, I think about them all the time during this play. And Heidi knows that. We think of our families during this. I mean, and this is my family too. I went, not to be all soft and cushy about it, but the theater community is my family. So I think about all of us doing this together. And that split second moment, there is a moment on stage, Paul, and I will say, Connor Gallagher, our director choreographer, gave you different stories to look at, no matter that, in addition to making this set that is sort of cantilevered, you have a different look everywhere you go. There's a different story going on, particularly in that scene. Depending on where you choose to look or can look. That's why I say, come back again, everyone. But the reality is that moment is probably one of the hardest ones for me in the play. And I actually put it at, I try to be organic and then put it as a battle for myself every night. And then Heidi, my amazing friend Heidi Kettering, has come up with something that is, it sort of puts the capper on it. And it, I go through all the feels there. It's not, it is, it's not easy. It's not easy, I guess, is your short answer.
Heidi, when you and David get home, do you yell at him for sinking the boat?
Not even remotely. I mean, we get in the car. We literally have like a, how was your show? Fine. How was your show? Fine. And then
weren't you there?
We get off the boat. Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, Ida and the captain have like maybe two moments where we literally walk past each other. And then we have the moment into the lifeboats where he comes over to Isidore and Ida and says, come, my dear, you must get in the lifeboat. And then we have a sort of dumb show over here. There's other stuff going on, but we're in it every night. And it's, no, I'm not getting on the boat because he won't get on the boat. And then the captain, like, so we have like a moment, but then we get off the boat and we come home and we feed the feral cats outside. And the boat is at the bottom of the ocean.
You know what? I don't know that I've ever asked. I don't get a lot of sort of married couples on the show, you know, from time to time. But when you are on stage together, David, I'll let you respond to this as well. Yeah. Let's get Heidi first. You know, when you're on stage, is like, is this your other half? Is he there? Or it's like, no, this is an actor and it's not David to me.
I mean, he's always David to me. You know, he's David. But no, I mean, the thing about David, I met him first as an actor. He is one of my favorite actors. He is one of the safest people as an actor to be on stage with, regardless of the fact that I am his wife. So what I love about being in a play with David is that I know that regardless of what happens, I am always in good hands with this actor. And on top of that, I am always in good hands with my partner. So, yes, he's David, but also no. I mean, in that moment, he is Captain Smith. It is not difficult for me to, I'm not like method. I am not Isidore Strauss. I am an actor portraying Isidore Strauss. However, it is not hard for me, particularly in this play, to get lost in what I'm doing. Because as Mark said, Connor gave us a world in which it, though that is very difficult emotionally to play, it isn't that difficult because the chaos is so controlled and so wonderful that we can get lost in it and we know that we're safe, but also I can access a real genuine emotion, even though I'm looking at my dear friend of 30 years and my husband of 20 years. It's a gift devoutly to be wished. Is what it is.
And David, do you ever think I'm going to hit on Ida Strauss over here? Because
totally. Yeah, totally. Now, I got to tell you, hey, here's a trivia question for you, Paul. Mm-hmm. What married couple that you're interviewing have played the exact same role in two different productions of 1776?
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to say what show, and I was going to be able to say 1776.
Yeah, no, we both played Dickinson. I mean, she played it for an entire run. I only played it for a weekend, but it was great fun.
I asked him for a few pointers.
Well, and plus in Hello, Dolly, you had to kind of, you know, there had to be dynamics, you know, where you weren't going along, right? That had to be fun.
Well, yeah, but the great thing about Dolly, I'm sorry, honey, you want to go?
No, I was just going to say, we never get to play opposite each other because that's, we have an age difference. That a lot of people don't seem to have an imagination about. And it was a first. Like we were in Annie Warbucks together and we got to almost get married, but I was actually plotting to kill him. So, you know, not really romantic. So Dolly was a thrill.
Fiction in life. Yeah. And by the way, Connor, the director, was supposed to join us. He is out of the country. Yes. And so while we tried to play with it to make it work, it wasn't going to be very easy. But so, James, let me just come to you and I'll ask Joel as well. But the power of the director in this show, because, again, it's history you're playing out, but because you're and Lillian's role, I'm putting you together, if you don't mind, but in your roles in the show, you do add a bit of humor, whatever. Is that directed? Is that, do you go into this saying, no, we know who we are in this scheme of things?
Yeah, I think that we get a general exoskeleton. I think Connor says, I cast you as the husband, I cast you as the wife, and this is what ideally I would love to see organically be created as the show progresses. And then he leaves that to us. He gives us a general direction and then he leaves that to us. I think the real beauty of what Connor did is being a director, but also a choreographer. He allowed the musical staging, because it's not heavily choreographed, right? But he allowed the musical staging to come out in a way that was just brilliant and beautiful and ever-changing, like a really gorgeous screensaver. You're like, something is shifting. Like, something is happening. And it's happening slowly, but intentionally. And it always gave people, which is pretty amazing for a first-time director at the Marriott, it gave people an opportunity, as Heidi said, to see so many different stories happening throughout the stage, throughout the show. How he placed Lightoller and Murdoch and the captain in various places. There was just a great deal of storytelling, not just for Lillian and I, but for the entire cast. And it's really quite lovely. I know I won't have the opportunity to say this, so I'm just going to say it real quick. You said you fell in love with Come From Away, me and Come From Away. Fun fact, not a fun fact. The iceberg that the Titanic crashed into was off the coast of Gander, Newfoundland.
Wow. Is that in your contract that every show you do has to be tied somehow to an iceberg or a...
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
By the way, I'm responsible for something in your show. Not in the show, but the food. Oh, Joel, the food. So have you eaten at the, what is now known as Three Embers, but now it's White Star Restaurant? Do you guys eat there at all?
We have not had the opportunity to eat the White Star.
But you know what they've done.
Have you, James?
Yes.
James
has eaten there?
Yeah.
So James, it's not a trivia question, but do you know what it is about the food that's special? Because they're doing something in the Three Embers this season for every show, for Joseph. They had all this Middle Eastern food. Do you know what they're doing with regard to the food in the White Star? Since you've eaten it,
well, I feel like the White Star feels like a restaurant, a more refined version of Elephant and Castle, right?
Is there such a thing?
All right.
Exactly.
It's like a classic McDonald's. I don't know how you can say that, but go ahead.
No, it's like, you know, there's the food is very English, England-ish. So it's like that. Like, I feel like that is the thing. Like, that's what they would offer the posh people who are going across seas.
That is true. But the food is based on the menu of the Titanic. And so when I did a show with Joseph and the cast of Joseph, and so I had Brent, who's the food director there, and he joined us for that. And what's funny, because I was asking some Andrew Lloyd Webber trivia, and I said, but we'll leave you out of it because you're the food guy. And he actually knew the answer, and he goes, I'm actually a theater guy. He goes, that's my background. So he ended up joining us for a lot more things. But here's what I'm credited for, Joel, back to you. I said during that show, when I asked him what the Titanic menu would be, and he didn't want to say, you know, it was going to be a secret. I said, well, I just hope you will serve iceberg lettuce.
You're bad.
And no, they do. Paul. And they are. So when I went opening night to the dinner, he said, do you see? I put in the iceberg lettuce. And I went, well, you were going to do that anyway. He goes, no, you gave me the idea.
Congratulations.
Hey.
So there you go. So yeah. Joel, I want to come back to you. I got to have credit for something. So Joel, question for you. You know, you've all been very complimentary of each other, just in terms of the history that you all bring from the world of theater, and that's not a way of saying everybody's old. But you know, you do have some tremendous history. But what I noticed when I watched the cast, there's also some young folks on that stage, and I'm sort of curious. And Joel, you for me kind of maybe in the middle of all of this. I don't know age wise, but can you talk about interactions you have like with the ones I'm defining as sort of the younger actors on the stage? Do they get it? Do they understand the sort of Chicago theater royalty, in my view, that they're performing with around them and learning from them? What do you see? What do you hear?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a relatively new Chicagoan. I've been here for, you know, just about 3.5 years. But yeah, I think they do get it, you know, and it's also really refreshing I think that they do lean on the older actors in the show. I think that they're curious. They all seem quite game. And, you know, I think the other thing about the Chicago community is that there is a kindness and a respect that happens that I think is instilled by the generations of Chicago actors who have been here that they latch on to, too. And I think that they honor as well. And that is just the most refreshing thing in the world to me.
And as we wrap, I'm going to come back to you, David. I kind of started with you and we'll sort of wrap with you. But sort of a similar question, which is, do you, almost any of you could respond to this, so I'm not going to cut anybody off who wants to, but do you feel some sort of, maybe obligation isn't the right word, responsibility, whatever word you want, but do you feel a sense of responsibility in terms of the up-and-coming actors in this to, you know, to sort of join the fray? And they're playing in the round, so there's a challenge to that to begin with, but are you guys teachers from your experience roles?
Look, you know, we can be. And certainly have been with a number of the folks in the show. I hope that they're all watching. Heidi and Mark, me, George, people who have been at this a long time, because that's the real teaching moment. You know, let's see how they behave and emulate that. You can only hope that that's the case. In our world, mentorship is very difficult right now. I mean, it's hard to be a mentor. It's, you can't walk up to someone and say, hey, don't do this, do this. What you hope they'll do is come to you and say, hey, I've got an issue. What about this? What do I do? Ah, well, here's what I would do. You know, we're always hoping that whatever example we set, whatever the kind of people we are, helps them to see where they can be 25 years from now if they want to be. But yes, we work around young people all the time. Yeah. And hope to God that whatever good example we can set is something that they take to heart and use for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Heidi, and Mark, I don't want to not let you participate in that question. So
I was just going to piggyback on that at the same time. Also, what I also find wonderful, I spend a lot more of my time listening now than I do talking. And because of that, I do think that younger people come to me with questions because I do try to lead with, you know, as David was saying, listening first, so that then people, you know, I'm not like, this is how you do it. But also I learn so much from the younger people that I'm working with about new ways that things are happening and the way that theater is moving. So, you know, to piggyback off of what David said, it's a sort of beautiful marriage of how can I be a mentor in a world where, you know, like, as David said, like 20 or so years ago, all of the young people were like, oh, teach me, all of you who came.
Oh, great.
And that's not really the way that it feels anymore. And I think part of that is that there are theater schools everywhere. There are theater as an industry has exploded in the last 15 years as far as education and stuff like that. So I'm not really articulating this very well because David said it really beautifully. The hope that someone will want to learn from me while knowing that I'm also learning is a really interesting, wonderful gift.
Beautiful. Mark David?
I ditto everything Heidi said. I have been listening a lot in the past, oh gosh, 7, 8, ten, oh gosh, the past
20
years, exactly. If people want to listen to me, I do. I love this business.
We'll be doing Frumacera next, but go ahead.
Exactly. But can I try the rabbi first? That'll be like my seventh time.
That's a better line.
Yeah. I'll do the rabbi. I feel the same, and I've been listening a lot, and I just want to say, to repeat what Heidi or David so eloquently said, I am really proud of the young people in this company. They are so talented. They are real. They're learning as they go. I feel like I'm still learning as I go. I mean, every experience is brand new. And if this is an indication of how our business can continue and be taken care of, I'm really encouraged and excited and happy for, you know, this occasion and this experience with these people.
My goodness, do they lead with joy. This is a very joyful
totally.
a group that is abounding with bubbly,
when we
smiley
need
delight.
Yes.
You know,
always there.
That is.
Agreed. And especially when they're not doing Joseph. I mean, they're doing a show which has, you know, some tragedy to it. So kudos to them. Well, I respect and acknowledge all of you so well. I only hope you don't experience what I do, which is more often than I want, which is somebody will stop me on the street and say, I used to watch you all the time. Are you retired? And which I follow up with words I cannot say on television, but I let them know that that's, the answer is no. I'm fine. I'm working. Anyway. How rude, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
you remind me of this guy that I think I knew.
Right. Well, usually people think I'm on PBS, so I don't know what that's all about anyway. Thank you for this extra time. I know the audiences who are into this show and into your careers have stayed on, and they're going to be thankful that we got to have this extra long discussion. I'm sorry if I've abused any of your schedules, but I couldn't end this thing because you're just so wonderful. So thank you all. Let me remind everybody, first of all, you all break legs every night that you're on set and on stage. Titanic the Musical, playing through June 1st at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, where drinks are only, they're like really cheap, but the candy, Joel, $2. It's like nothing.
Candy.
I load up for the next show at the Marriott. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.